This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts, and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi everybody, please welcome with me Emily Sopers from New Zealand. Emily is a passionate cyclist and decided to do like a whole cycling tour with her partner Hugo through Europe, and she left last year in March and did it whole through the year until December, and has a lot to talk about, a lot of experience, tips, tricks, and stories for us. And I'm super excited and grateful. Thank you so much for making some time, Emily, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Should be fun to relive the trip a little bit through those memories.
Yeah, it must be amazing because it has been through different seasons, but also just through probably a whole lot of challenges and fun bits. So
yeah,
I'm curious.
Yeah.
First of all, can you explain to us what is bike cycling through Europe, and how did that idea come about in the first place?
Yeah, sure. So bikepacking is when you travel by bike with everything that you need to survive, pretty much. So we cycled with our sleeping gear, our tent, our cooking equipment, some pantry staples, you know, first aid kit, togs, clothes, everything that we needed to have a good time in Europe and to cycle every day and see where we, you know, wanted to end up. So we did that for 9 months, like you said. We decided to do it only like 6 months before we committed to the before the date that we left. So I don't even can't even fully remember how it came about, but I know that I had watched a YouTube video years back about this guy who bikepacked South America, and I just thought it was such a cool way to travel. And I wasn't even really a cyclist at this point, but I was super inspired by that mode of travel, all of the places that he was able to get to on his bike, and like the interactions that he had with locals. And I thought it was awesome. And then met Hugo maybe a year later, and Hugo used to be a New Zealand cyclist, so he loves cycling. And I always did lots of mountain biking, but with Hugo, I got way more into cycling. So we cycled a lot together. It was kind of our shared hobby. And we wanted to go traveling, and we didn't want to do it the typical way. I guess we didn't really want to live in London and work there and do sort of weekend trips. We wanted to be fully present in the travel, and the most affordable way for us, and also the way that kind of sparked the most interest, was bikepacking. It's pretty cheap because you don't have to pay for any transport costs, and you have your tent, so you avoid lots of accommodation costs as well. So for us, it was kind of a no-brainer. We both love cycling. We love to explore. We like to go in the, you know, kind of off on the off-beaten path. And this was a way that we could do that. Yeah.
That is super amazing. Like, just to have that common hobby. Yeah. And the same interest, and then also being able to have that big of an adventure. What did you need to do to be mentally prepared for the trip, but also physically? Because, I mean, cycling is, as you said, you were already into it, so you must have been kind of fit already. But to actually bike through Europe, it's a different level, I assume. So did you prep for, like, how did you practice, or how did you prepare yourself for it?
Yeah, we did do a couple of mini trips in New Zealand first. So we took over our bikes and all of our equipment. So we packed that into bike boxes and flew with it. So we had tested the equipment on two trips. We did the Alps to Ocean, which is an epic bike route from Tekapo to Oamaru. And I would highly recommend it. So it's kind of an off track. It's kind of a track. You don't follow the road, only at a few points. So it's really kind of easy to navigate because it's set up as a cycling route. Yeah. And then we also did another one, which was 1 week in the Marlborough Sounds. And yeah, that was amazing. We had such a good time. We kind of did a lot of the Marlborough Sounds, and then we went to Derval Island, which is an island way up kind of the north of the Sounds, and did a couple of days on that island. And yeah, it was pretty hilarious because we didn't bring enough food. And there's not a single shop on that island.
Oh my god, we
were starving. No, but Hugo had his fishing rod, which he also actually brought to Europe. And so there was one day dedicated to just fishing because we had to catch food to eat. Yeah.
So oh my god, did you actually? Yeah. Like you had to.
Yeah.
So and you managed to get fish.
Four fish. And we ate all of it because we were so hungry.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but it was such a fun trip. Oh my gosh. And some of the most beautiful roads that were ridden across the whole world were those first roads in the Marlborough Sounds. Love it there. Yeah, and then that was kind of some physical prep to make sure that our bikes were set up. And then we also, yeah, I did lots of riding, so did Hugo, back home. It was kind of part of our daily routine to bike to work and stuff. But definitely I had never done as much riding as we did. So it was pretty crazy. And the first 2 weeks, I think because we felt like the weight of the whole journey that was ahead of us, you know, we had committed to thousands of kilometers to do across Europe. And I think in those first 2 weeks, we were like, man, we've got so much to do. Like we have to just get on the road and go and do it, you know? And so we pushed it quite hard in those first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I became quite sick. So I think the third week, I got super, super sick because I think I was really run down and just, I think a little bit sort of burnout, very early burnout. So I developed like a throat infection and nose infection. And but anyway, went to the hospital in Turkey because that's where we started. And they were so good. It was like 15 New Zealand dollars to go to the hospital and get my medication and everything. And so, you know, I had antibiotics or whatever, and within a couple of days I was better. But yeah, it was kind of a big reminder, just slow down, you know, we have time.
Take care of yourself.
Exactly. Take care of the health. It's so important. And we were like, this is a long trip, you know, we don't need to rush things. But still, yeah. So we ended up, I think, averaging about 70 kilometers a day across the whole, 9 months, roughly 70 kilometers a day, I think. And then we had a couple of rest days as well, or quite a few. But there's not really that much you can do to prepare your body for that when you're also working full time. But it's amazing how fast the body becomes used to a new routine. And once we were going for a few days, like our bodies kind of understood this is what we're doing now, you know, and the muscles weren't so sore. And yeah, I didn't have any physical problems across the whole trip other than the sickness. Didn't have any sore knees, no injuries. So yeah, really good.
That's amazing because you hear so much, and even for, you know, an amateur cycler or cyclist, is like you can easily do a little bit too much and then have knee problems or like something else is off. So for you to actually do the whole lot and have no issues whatsoever is amazing.
Nice. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Especially it goes up and down like mountains, hills, down.
The physical load is huge, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that's really important is making sure that you're comfortable on the bike, and especially like on the seat, I think is super, super important. And I don't know if you want to hear about this, but I was on a Brooks saddle, which is kind of a old school leather saddle.
Yeah.
And I wore everything merino, so merino underwear and merino shorts. And I think the breathability of that and just the not too much friction and all of that. It meant that I was really comfortable on the seat for the long days. Yeah. So that's, yeah, something I think especially for women is super important to get that right. Anyway, so those sorts of things, you know, making sure that the bike is set up well. And in terms of mental prep, I think, honestly, we weren't really mentally prepared enough. I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was a lot of the time. But then also the highs were so high, you know, and the lows are so low. So I was never fully prepared for how hard some days were going to be. But then the fact that other days are so good, you know, that's what makes it so amazing, I think, and so rewarding. Yeah.
Oh, I definitely want to dive into the highs and the lows for sure. Yeah. But just for everyone, like, did you sign up for a health insurance for the whole time?
Yes. Have full health insurance. Yeah,
I think it's important, especially for what you have done, just in case. I mean, you were lucky that you just got a little bit sick in the beginning, but just imagine something worse happened and then you're stuck.
And cycling on the roads, you know, having an accident, like, super important. Yeah,
so much can happen. So that's good. I mean, clearly you guys were well prepared and careful, but still it can happen at any point in time. So it's good to be safe there.
The amazing thing about Europe, though, is there is help around every corner, you know. It's so populated. There's, so many people, pharmacies, hospitals everywhere. Yeah. I'd say it's a really good place to start bikepacking, you know, a little bit easier than Malvera sounds.
And there is food, I've heard, on every corner. Oh my God. Can you tell us a little bit about the route you have taken, which countries you have been to, like that everyone can have an understanding and an idea how much you have been actually traveling? Because saying 70 kilometers per day is one number, but actually saying we went from this country to this country to this country is like a whole different thing.
Yeah. Oh, and Europe is so cool because you can cross so many countries. So quite close. So we started in central Turkey and then we cycled to the Turkish coast, all along the Turkish coast. So that was our biggest single country. I think that was 4 or 5 weeks of cycling. And then we absolutely fell in love with Turkey. Like, I would recommend it to anyone. Then we went to Greece. We did some island hopping on the way and then pretty much just cycled up the Balkans. So, Greece, Albania, Montenegro, Bosnia, where after that, Slovenia. And then we went across Italy, France. I've got family in the Netherlands. So then we went up, did Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and back to France, and then Spain. And then we took a ferry to Morocco. So we did 2 weeks in Morocco, and that was incredible as well. And then we flew, we actually did some of Asia, Southeast Asia. So we flew to Malaysia, and then we cycled up Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. And that's where we finished, and then we flew home. Yeah, so we did 20 countries by bike, which is cool. Yeah.
Oh my God, that is so incredible. It's so amazing.
Yeah, it was an experience. And every country is so different, you know, and it's amazing how you cross these land borders in Europe and initially you think that not all that much has changed, but you start to pick up on these subtle differences. And it was amazing to start in Turkey. We didn't really plan this and we didn't really know, but, you know, we learned all of the Turkish history and culture, and then moving into Europe, you sort of, we really felt how that history sort of wove together in all of the Balkan countries and kind of, got deeper and deeper into the story as we moved into Central Europe. So it was such an awesome way to travel, to start in Turkey and build onto that European history and see the subtle differences along the way. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, totally different architecture. Everything looks different. Everything is different in each country. Mm. But you're right. I would have expected as well that the differences are really subtle.
Yes.
And it's really cool for you to be able to say, we just crossed the border and we could already see the differences. Mm. So do you have like another example for us?
Yeah, I mean, kind of a funny one is in Turkey and then Greece and Montenegro and Albania, they all have this pastry, which is like a swirl, and it's filled with either mince or like feta and spinach, you know, kind of a classic flaky pastry. And in each country, that filling might change just slightly. And it's all called, I think in one country it was like borek, in another country byrek, in another country burek. Like, it's all just these subtle tiny differences, you know?
Yeah.
And then maybe a little bit in the way of the people as well. You notice small things. I think in like Turkey and Greece, the people were quite like chaotic. There's a talking a lot, like very excitable. And then when we went,
lots with their hands and
yeah, lots with their hands, lots going on, very animated kind of people. And then kind of as you move further north, I think the people were like slightly quieter, more maybe introverted or very kind still, but you know, just quite sort of more toned back. And yeah, in Slovenia, you know, all the way up in the north of the Balkans, you know, the people were super quiet, very diligent, hardworking, and just focused on their task and not so welcoming and exuberant the way that, you know, they are on the lower Mediterranean. So those kind of differences, I guess, you see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was super interesting. And then in Asia as well, you know, the differences were, I would say, much bigger between the different countries because the religion changes. So in Malaysia, there was, Muslim. And then also the language, you know, and in Malaysia, they speak three different languages. So the language that they use to communicate amongst themselves is English. So it was awesome because we got to speak English. And then we crossed the border to Thailand and suddenly they speak Thai with this crazy amazing font that we couldn't even understand, you know. And so the differences in Asia were huge between the countries. Crossing the border there was way more of a contrast than in Europe, I guess. Yeah,
I can totally imagine that. Mm. And unfortunately, I haven't been traveling much in Asia. I hope I can experience that too. But even with the language,
very different from Europe. It was quite a shock to, I think, go to Asia after Europe, because in Europe, you know, life was quite easy for us on the road. It was always really easy to find, you know, clean water sources and to communicate with people a little bit. And the food was more familiar to us and hygiene levels were high, you know, those sorts of things. And then in Asia, it was such a contrast and the climate was so hard as well, you know, so it was, it was a very different world, such a different world.
How was that for you with the climate? Because you have been through different countries and some of them have quite, like, you went through mountains and all of that as well, and the climate is changing as well, like even same season but you go up the mountain it's different and below it's different. So how did you cope with that? Because the higher you get, the thinner the air, the harder with cycling and activities, like physical activities. How did you cope with that?
That was one of the big challenges as well. And because you're pretty much living outside, you know, if the weather is bad, it impacts you so much, you know. You don't have a nice, warm, dry place to go and, you know, walk inside of. So that was one of the things, that was one of the biggest things that we navigated for sure. And when we started, in our first week, we arrived in central Turkey and they had a cold snap. So the week before we were looking at the weather and it was looking lovely. We were like, yep, you know, 18 to 20 degrees, that's good. We can handle that. And then they had a cold snap and it was freezing. Like one day, on our second day, we were cycling in the snow, like literal snow. Wow. So that morning, or the morning before, we had gone to the store to, on our first day bikepacking, we had gone to the store to buy ski gloves and thick pants because we just weren't prepared for that. We didn't think that was going to happen. So, we bought those things and we got completely snowed on. It was really hard, but we were trying to stay positive, you know, and we survived. And then we went into a hotel that night, of course, because we needed to warm up. And then, and then the next day, like, my shoes were so wet from the snow. So I had to cycle with wet shoes, and my feet were frozen because it was like 1 degree outside. And so we found this little roadside gas station, and he let us in, and he had a coal burner, and he put we put our feet there, and we dried our shoes, and it was just, oh my gosh, we were so grateful. And this guy, he works out in the middle of nowhere. We hadn't seen stores for kilometers, and then he let us warm our feet. So that was a challenge. And then in the Dolomites we had challenges as well, because at night, like, we had the craziest thunderstorms, and the mountains, wow. Like, because we were camping, and those mountains, like, you just feel the power of nature when you're in one of those storms. Yeah. Oh my god, it was probably the most scared we had been on our whole trip, because there was this thunderstorm literally right around us. The whole tent would suddenly light up. It was so loud, and we just like held on to each other, and we were just we were like, oh please let us survive, like. But yeah, so that was really challenging, you know. And then the next day you're busy with like drying out your tent and hoping that the weather's going to clear. And it was not easy. The weather was the hardest thing. But to be fair, we did have really good weather, and we were well prepared for rain and cold. So that was good. And if it was really bad weather, we would just go and stay in a hotel, of course. But yeah, we did challenge ourselves often to get into that zone of like, you know, we can do this, you know, we can be strong, you know, to kind of, I don't know, because it is about doing hard things, you know, traveling like this. I think we were proud that we were doing something hard, and we were like, we are stronger for it. We can survive these sorts of things. And you end up giving up a lot of like the little pleasures of life, I think, you know, and the comforts of life. And when we came home, oh my god, just to have like running hot water on demand and electricity and a comfortable bed to sleep in, like, we were just unbelievably grateful for those things. And it really puts into perspective the joy of like those simple pleasures that we usually take for granted in life. So I mean that has very quickly worn off. I think I was grateful for like 3 days and then it was back to normal. But it was, you know, just those basic things of like food, a warm bed, a shelter, hot water. Like, we really grew some gratefulness for those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. We have such luxurious lives now, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And then that's Asia insane. Was, you know, the other end of the spectrum, where it was so hot, like 30 to 38 degrees and 90% humidity. So we would leave the house, and within 5 minutes, like, our clothing was completely wet, drenched with sweat. So the first few days I really struggled with that because the discomfort of it. But we just got used to it.
Again, getting used to everything over time,
Yeah, it's amazing what the mind can become accustomed to. Yeah,
that's the thing. It's not just like, on one hand, of course, cycling, it's such a body thing as well, like physical activity that your body needs to get used to. But the mind game you actually played over that time is so much bigger, because as you said, you went through like different challenges, like the weather, or like being in wet clothes all day because it's sweaty, or like in rain. This is not comfortable. And to not give up and not be like, I quit, I can't do this anymore, is such a big challenge and achievement. Like, congratulations. Definitely so many people would have given up, just because that's it's hard, and we tend to give up when things are hard. But if you actually push through it, like, it's such a big growth opportunity, and it's amazing to see, like, to look back and be aware how strong you can be. So how did it feel like once you were back home? Like, you must have felt quite proud, hey, and just have that joy.
Yeah, we were really proud. I think, you know, like you say, it's not easy, and it wasn't easy for us, but, you know, anyone can do it if you want it enough, you know? And when you're in those moments, like you said, like, you can, well, and often I would get upset about it, you know, I would, it would be so easy to have a cry or have a tantrum or something, but, and I did at times, you know, either. And then, but you just keep moving forward. Like, it's the only thing you can actually do in that scenario. You know, you can get really upset, you can complain, you can get frustrated, but the only actual thing that you can do is just keep moving forward, you know? And, and I think that was where your mind gets stronger, you know, and I am, I am really proud of us, and our relationship got stronger, you know, to be able to support each other through those times, you know, when something is not easy for me, it's also not easy for Hugo. And that gives you so much like shared empathy and to get through something so challenging together. And also I think the fact that we were able to do it was also that we had each other, you know? Hugo's mind is so strong. Like, I have so much admiration for him. Like, at times where I would easily break down, he would never, he like never fails. Yes. His mind is so strong. And I think it's because he was a cyclist for so long. You know, he's so used to pushing his body to limits that most of us probably wouldn't be able to. Or wouldn't want, or don't want to, you know. So he's been through those situations, and so I think I was the weak link when it came to that stuff. But I did get stronger, you know, and I am proud of myself for making it through. And I think there's heaps to learn, heaps for me that I'm going to bring into like my career next, and just my next life moves, because I hope I'll be able to handle more, sort of thing.
It definitely makes you stronger in so many aspects. And I'm pretty sure that you might have been, you know, a weaker part in some aspects, but probably also a stronger part for him in other points where he might have thought, oh my God, I wouldn't be able to do it without you, because it might be like the physical parts, or, you know, pushing himself to limits that he is used to. But there must have been moments for him as well where he was just so grateful to have you around, and where you could comfort him, you know?
Yeah, and I think so.
He might have given up without you. So I think it's like such a great thing.
We balanced each other's weaknesses and strengths, I think, you know?
So yeah,
It was really cool. Yeah, I was much better at doing the planning, you know, where do we want to go?
And also,
and like planning food as well, you know, what do we want to eat? Because for me, it was really important to still have a good, like, healthy diet, and to still eat vegetables, and, you know, not just eat lollies to keep us going and that sort of stuff. Like, I still wanted to have some sort of normalcy around diet. So that was kind of like more my strength. And then Hugo was like that stable rock that got us through.
Perfect. Like, he probably wouldn't have been thinking maybe that much about the food, might have had a little bit of a malnutrition along the way.
I think it wasn't he'd be eating like chocolate and chips and lollies to get it through, and pies. Although, no, there are no pies overseas. Like, we were eating a pie when we got home.
Yeah, that's not really the European way.
No.
Oh, God.
And often we would also struggle, like, in, for example, like in France and I think the Netherlands especially, like, if we went out for food, the portions were so tiny, you know, we were hungry. So it was always a challenge. Like, Europeans are very, you know, very sophisticated when it comes to food, I think, relative to New Zealanders, maybe.
Oh, God, that's such a funny thing to mention. Like, I have not thought about it much. But you might be right, but it's probably also dependent on what place you go to.
But food was a massive part of it, because it was, you know, it was great because we could eat whatever we wanted, you know, we could try all the local foods because we were hungry, we were burning it off, and it was, you know, it was awesome. And it's such a way to like taste and to experience the cultures through the food. Yeah, that was such a benefit of cycling.
100%, you can't even eat that much. Like, you burned so many calories, you can't even eat that much. So you were probably in heaven. You could have eaten just whatever you want.
No, it was great. But we did miss a few things. We did miss a few things about New Zealand, because we do have great food here as well, you know.
It's different, right? And probably if you would have gone traveling more around maybe England, you might have felt a little bit more like home.
Yeah.
But the other countries are quite different. Yeah.
And Asia was, wow, you know, a whole nother level of different. You can't even really find Western food there. And that was quite challenging sometimes, because we would be in these small rural villages and towns, and there'd be one food place, and it was just, you know, you were going to eat whatever they had there, and there was not really much choice. And that was hard, because often these places, like, it was really sad. It was, you know, Asia is really, really poor outside of the main centres. You know, life is so, so basic. And so the food that you get, it's, you know, in Cambodia, it was hard to find even some fresh vegetables with the food. You know, you'd have rice and like pork or some beef. And yeah, it was hard. Some of these places had very low hygiene standards, but you know, we had to eat there. It was our only option often. And yeah, the quality of life is like very, very different there. And yeah, that was something that we really started to struggle with in Asia as well, because the first month and a half, it was amazing. You know, we were in Malaysia, which actually is probably my favorite country in Southeast Asia of the ones we went to, because the quality gap is less, you know. It's there's not, the poor aren't so poor that they're on very basic kind of life.
Yeah.
But then when we went to Thailand, like the gap between the rich and the poor is really high, and the poor people do live very, very basic lives. Yeah. It got really hard. Yeah. Because we were in Asia for 3 months, and the last month and a half, I was a little bit depressed, to be honest, from the quality of life that we were seeing. Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, you learn so much, and that's probably also why you can tell in the end, coming back home, you appreciate what you have so much more.
Yeah, but the contrast between here and Asia, you know, it felt like worlds apart.
Yeah, we can easily complain on a really high level, like third world problems, while other people really know how the tough life looks like and how poverty looks like. And we don't actually have an idea until we go and see it and experience it with people.
I think it's so important to have those experiences, because you're right. Like, I used to complain about all sorts of stuff before I went traveling that, you know, it's kind of almost embarrassing that I was complaining about that now, you know. Other people's lives are so much harder, and it's kind of more important to focus on like what we do have and how we can try and help, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think I was going to say something that I did really like was that our dollar is worth so much more than the different currencies in Asia. So, you know, if you go for a lunch and for them, you know, they charge you $2. If you give them $3, for us that's nothing, and for them it's really meaningful. So that was one way that we, you know, tried to feel a little bit better, because we were traveling on a budget too. You know, we weren't going there to give money out, but it was really nice that we could do those little things to like help the people just a tiny bit. Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
And then they would give you a hug and a kiss, and they'd want a photo with you. And, you know, it was so meaningful for them. It was just unbelievable. Yeah.
How did you deal with the language barrier? Because you have said you were experiencing so much more with locals, which was one of the main reasons why you wanted to choose this way of traveling, right?
Mm.
How did you end up dealing with that? Because I know sometimes it's still the, like, we are all human and we come together in empathy and, you know, have so many things in common. But when the language is different, how did you experience it, especially going through so many countries? It was always a commonality to have a language barrier.
Yeah. We weren't in an English speaking country at all on the trip. The Netherlands was probably the easiest, but we did use Google Translate a lot. And some people were super open to doing that. You know, we in Turkey, oh my gosh, we had so many great conversations with people through Google Translate. And, you know, you can read so much in a person's facial expressions, and it's amazing the connection that you can feel. And even when it's a basic conversation, or, you know, even if it's a basic conversation, it's still really cool to be able to connect. And so much is said with body language, I feel. You know, you can you can connect with a smile, and with shrugs or laughs or, you know, whatever. So I thought that was really special. But in Turkey, yeah, we had lots of cool connections with people, and Turkish people are so open and they love to get to know us. Actually, we found that in all the Muslim countries that we went to, they were probably our favourite in terms of connecting with people, because they are so open and welcoming, and they're so proud to have you in their country, and they really want to communicate with you and hear your story. So, in Turkey and in Morocco, you know, in Morocco, there was one night where we were trying to find somewhere to stay, and we ended up going into this cafe looking for some food. And it turned out they weren't a cafe at all. They were just in Google Maps cafe, and it was this bunch of guys hanging out. And we were like, oh, you guys selling food? And, you know, this was via Google Translate. And they were like, no, but wait here. And they drove off to the next town to go and bring us some food, and just watched us eat, and we're smiling and happy. Aww. And then we were like, oh, we're just going to camp here. You know, we've got a tent. We were trying to communicate to them that we had a tent, and they were like, no, you're not sleeping outside. All via Google Translate. And they had us at their house. We shared a meal together and just laughed over the fact that we couldn't understand each other, but ended up having some really nice conversations via Translate. So, you know, those sorts of things. People were typically quite open to communicating in that way. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. I have experienced a little bit of it, especially most of my friends here speak English really well. But when their parents come to visit and they don't speak that well, I still want to communicate with their parents. And it's like these little things, the smile, the little hug you give.
Yeah.
And even though you don't have much to say, they can feel that you mean well and that you share love.
Yeah, you can see it in someone's eyes, you know.
Exactly. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
I agree. But it was really nice to be in Malaysia because, you know, as I said, like, people really speak a lot of English there. And it was amazing because so many, you know, pretty much every time that we sat down for lunch or dinner, someone would come over to our table and share a meal with us and tell us about their life. And and so they could speak kind of decent English. And so that was so amazing to have that experience with them. And they've all got such interesting lives, you know. It's pretty turbulent times that Asia's been through in the last sort of couple of decades. And, yeah, it was just amazing to hear that from locals. And sometimes we did feel sad that we did feel so sad that we couldn't speak the language. You know, if there was a superpower that I could have, it probably would be to speak every language because, you know, to be able to connect with everyone and hear all those stories, it would be amazing. In Turkey, we, because the Turkish language was pretty easy to learn, the basics. And so we spent a bit of time learning that language before we went. And then while we were there, we picked up on a few more words. And it was just awesome to be able to try and use a bit of our Turkish. And people responded so well to it. You know, they loved the fact that you could say hello and please and thank you and the numbers in Turkish. Yeah, so that was really cool.
I think every culture, every country, everyone appreciates so much if you try, right? It's like, I really loved it about my parents. No matter where we traveled, when we were on holiday, they would always at least learn basics like thank you, hello, and goodbye in their language and say it to the hotel staff as well and just try to be kind of, you know, adjusting and be there. And
I think it's the most important thing you can do while traveling, you know, to show your respect for the country that you're in and to show that you want to have an interaction with the people there, you know. I think it's really important.
What do you think was the most shocking thing you have experienced on this whole journey?
I think that was this place that we stayed at in Izmir. It's a city in Turkey. It was our last big city that we were passing through, and we had set it up through Warm Showers that we were going to stay with someone there. So that's an app for cycling tourists to stay with locals and, you know, on their house. And this guy, you know, he said we could stay at his house, and honestly, I have never seen like a sadder house. It was an apartment with one room and everything crumbling, like everything broken, everything crumbling, just so poor, you know, has absolutely nothing. And, you know, the kitchen, it was, the shower, for example, was a bucket that you fill up with water and pour over yourself. The kitchen was the same as the bathroom sink, and it was like a layer of sludge, you know, a couple of centimeters thick along the bottom of it. Like, they don't have any way to clean it. And the toilet was like a hole in the ground. And, you know, and they have one room to live in, and they've got a little baby, and they all sleep on one mattress, and that's where they eat and live as well. And we just were shocked. Like, it was truly the most shocking experience we had been through. We were just speechless about it, and it was so sad. Like, and it, the woman, she was from Ukraine. She had like a very troubled past. You could see that in her eyes. Like, she didn't really say anything about it, but, you know, and just all these things were so heartbreaking and so shocking. And we just couldn't believe that they had sort of invited us into their home.
Yeah.
And so we slept in our tent on like a, on the concrete sort of ground outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so sad. Yeah. But it was, I think it was really kind of like very important experience for us, you know, and
again,
it's that whole grateful thing. But it was just shocking to fully experience how those people are living, because it's so easy to see it and to feel empathy, and then when you actually have to live it, you smell all the smells, and you know, you feel the feeling of living there, and you just can't believe that that's someone's life. So
yeah
that was shocking in like not a very good way. What else was shocking? I don't know. I think that truly was the most shocking thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Horrible.
I guess it's for us as people who are living in really, really perfect conditions.
Yeah.
If we see those things, you know, in the news or somewhere, or we hear about it, like, of course, like, I'm a really empathetic human, and you are too. Mm. So we kind of have an understanding, or we can feel sad over it by just listening to it or seeing it. But to experience it firsthand right there, it's such a different thing. Yeah. It's so
extreme.
Heartbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it's so easy to read those articles and see the pictures, but it's so different to experience them in the real life. And it's so easy to detach ourselves when it's just an image on a screen.
Yeah. And you turn it off, and then you move on the next minute. Yeah. You experience something happy, and you can be like, you can cheer up. But for them, that's like everyday. That's
everyday life. You know, that is everyday life. And we were kind of relieved to get out of there. You know, we were relieved to leave. And for those people, there is no way out, you know?
Yeah. You can't just leave, yeah.
No, yeah. So that was really, really sad. Yeah, but, yeah, there's the problem is that there's nothing you can do, you know? There's so many people living in that scenario, and what do you do with your sadness, you know? Like, I struggle with that, because I kind of don't know where to direct your sadness. The problem is too big, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But another shocking thing was, actually, now that I think about it, in Albania, we went through the mountains, and people, you know, have donkeys, and they travel by donkey. Yeah. It's like Morocco. And it's just like, yeah, people carry all their, you know, those classic donkeys with two things on the sides for all their luggage. And that's how people travel around. And that was quite cool to see. Yeah. Yeah,
it's so interesting how you think it shouldn't exist anymore, but it's just doesn't exist in our world, right? And our day-to-day life. But there are so many countries where this is just normal, and they wouldn't know.
Albania, you know, that's in Europe, which we see as a very much first world kind of very modern place. But not everywhere in Europe is like that,
No, I think that's also really good for, you know, A, for you to see, and B, to put it out there, because people think Europe is this flash place. But Europe has so many different countries. There's poverty. There are countries that are living very different from other countries. Like, as you said, every country in Europe is so different, and there are rich countries and there are poorer countries, and you know, that's such a big difference. Or Mediterranean countries have such a different lifestyle and way of living and way of personality. And it's like you just notice when you actually go there and travel through it all and see those people and meet those people.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. You almost have to see it side by side.
Yeah.
To fully understand how different those things are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one where we saw that big difference was when we went from Turkey to Greece, and we went to this beautiful, magical island called Chios. And it was like, I don't think many people live there at all. We didn't have any really expectation of how it was going to be, but we started cycling through this island, up this island and up this big hill, and we ended up at this big monastery, sort of old town up on the hill. And the silence, like, and we realized we hadn't heard silence like that in so long, because Turkey is chaos. Like, everywhere is chaotic. It's so exciting. But we didn't realize until we were out of it, you know, until we'd literally gone to a different country, how crazy it was there, and how peaceful and serene and relaxed Greece is, you know. It's a different kind of feel. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you're right about the Mediterranean versus sort of more central Northern Europe. It's such different people. The Mediterranean people are so like loud and casual, and then
love their music and their siesta, and usually their life starts late at night.
Yes,
that's like kind of it's a different vibe.
Really different.
Yeah.
And then Asia was very, very different again. You know, people have so little, but they're very happy. And also music is quite a big thing there, you know, especially on the islands, lots of guitar and very chill island vibes, you know. And and Vietnam was crazy. They people like karaoke is a massive thing there.
Oh yeah.
They sit around in their houses and do karaoke, and they have these massive big speakers that they point out to the road. And they're like wailing on the karaoke machine, full blast out to the road.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, it was just crazy. They're so quirky, the Vietnamese.
Very cool.
Yeah, no, it was great. People are different everywhere, but they're also like, there's like a unique human element as well, you know, that we all have. And that like is a common thread, you know, but yeah, personalities change.
Which is so good that we all have that human connection together, which binds us and just makes us what we are able to connect through that as well, right? So it's really cool. On the opposite, like from what the most shocking was, what has been the most beautiful or rewarding thing you have experienced on the trip?
The wild natural places in Europe are so amazing, you know. Because we obviously tried to seek out all of the, you know, quite quiet places and the mountains and the lakes and the rivers, and those were so special, because you sometimes feel like you're the only one that's discovered it, you know, in Europe, because we would stay away from all the really touristy spots and try and find the low-key places. And cycling in those mountains in Europe, there's nothing better. Like, the roads are incredible, the scenery is amazing, you know, you're feeling strong, like you're happy, the sun is shining, like the high that you get from that is just so cool. I think Europe is so beautiful. And then also, you know, the beaches on the islands in Greece and Croatia, like, just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. I think the nature was like, the people obviously are a highlight when you're traveling and meeting locals, but you know, the most beautiful places in the world are the ones where the people aren't, you know.
Is so true. And especially with your way of traveling, you experience so much more of that, because the touristy places, of course, they are chaotic, always want to have lots of people and a lot of people from the countries to attract tourists. the way they deal with them is very different too. So actually being away or staying away from the touristy places is also giving you such a different view on the actual country, which is so nice.
Yeah. Yeah, you see all the hidden places and, you know, you hear from locals, oh, you have to go to this spot. And, you go to the local spots and the water holes and the rivers and things like that. And, I really love that. I think the nature of Europe is really amazing, which is not something that I sort of thought about Europe. As like a Kiwi, I thought it was all about like the historic old towns. And it is, obviously, but I was so amazed by how beautiful the nature is there. I wasn't expecting it, I think.
That's nice. Good. I mean, fair enough. New Zealand is well known for the most beautiful nature in the world. It's good to be able to offer some other beautiful places.
I think so. It's totally different, hey?
Yeah.
The Pyrenees were also very cool because they were so quiet. Like, we hadn't been in such a quiet place in all of Europe. You know, there was one night where we camped up in the mountains and it was wind still. So there were no birds. You know, in New Zealand, everywhere you hear birds.
Yeah.
But there were no birds. There was no wind. It was just like utter silence. And it was kind of creepy, but it was just an amazing experience.
And in that case, it's probably good that you had Hugo as well, because if you are just constantly alone with your own thoughts, that is a totally different mind challenge, I reckon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And even sort of because we camped, you know, illegally in a lot of countries, like I would feel so much anxiety, I think, being on my own. So definitely I was grateful that we did that together.
Hey, what a trip.
Yeah.
What message do you think would you like to get out there into the world to the people who haven't experienced any of this, who sometimes don't know how people are living there? Like, what's kind of your take on that journey, your biggest learning thing, your lesson?
I think you just have the bravery to go and experience it, you know, take the plunge and put yourself in the deep end and commit to doing something that's hard. You know, I think that's where you're going to get the most learning and the most connection with people. Just sort of be brave in how you travel and the questions that you ask people and in approaching other people. And I don't know. I think that's probably what I would say, because I'm glad that, we watched something super inspirational before we went. It was like an inspirational documentary about this climber, and he died, and his mum said that he lived with no regret. You know, he went out there and he died doing something that he loved. And she said to all young people, like, just go and do it and be brave. And that was what motivated us to commit to something hard like this. And I think, in those like challenges and in the hardest things that you do in your life, there's always the most to gain. So I think being brave with what you attempt is really important.
I think that's the biggest thing anyway, is that whatever gets you out of your comfort zone is actually what will give you the biggest joy. Mm-hmm. And you look back on it and you feel so good. It's true. Like, even like, of course, I'm living really far away from my family, and my family is scared that something happens to me, and I'm afraid that something happens to them. But I always tell my family, at least, you know, if something ever happens, I was happy because I lived the life that I really wanted to live, and I do the things I really like to do. And so you don't have to feel bad for me. Of course, they will be sad because, you know, we will grieve the loss of the people that we can't see anymore, but they don't have to be sad for me because
you're doing what you want.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Like, moving across the world, that's a huge step to take. And like, there's so many barriers that you can create in your mind. You know, you really have to go for it. I mean, even the same thing with starting a podcast, like, you know, the fears around that and
things.
And then you go and do it and you get to connect with people and share important messages and that sort of thing. So I think there's a lot to be said for doing things that are challenging, yeah, and scary.
That's so true.
Yeah.
So I think we could talk for ages because there are just so many stories we haven't even like started to talk about yet, and there's just so much else. I want to just keep that for another time.
Nice.
And not overwhelm everyone.
No.
But, yeah, it is just amazing that you took the time to talk about your experience and biking and just how important it is to experience it and to just do it. And again, put yourself out there and stick to it, not quit.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a great message already. And thank you. It's just awesome. I love to hear the stories also, how you connect to the people, because that's the part I enjoy the most.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's been such a good chat. Thank you for listening to all the stories.
Oh, I will take some time to listen to it even more. But yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We end every episode with our quick three questions, just to round up. Yeah, so I think I could hear a few of the answers throughout the story already, but we just grab them in a little rapid fire. So question number one, what did you miss the most about New Zealand?
My bed.
yeah, it's so underrated, yeah.
Yeah, and family.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, question number two.
Oh yes, and we did do some activities actually. Is that the question you're gonna ask?
Yes. Is there any activity you would highly recommend? And it can be in any of the countries you have been traveling through.
Well, you know how I was saying it was really cold when we got to Turkey. We actually went skiing. And skiing in Turkey was so cool. It was so cheap. We rented gear, got a lift up the mountain, food, and ski pass for the day, $70 each. And the terrain was epic. It was just such a fun day. Yeah,
really nice. Cool vibes.
And no tourists, so that was something I'd recommend, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. Skiing in Turkey. I wouldn't have guessed that would be an activity I would, you know, connect to Turkey, but that's great.
No, yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. I hope everyone who's listening can take something from it, even if it's just that motivation to keep going no matter what they do. It doesn't have to be biking. It has to be, or it can be just something small, as you said as well.
Yeah.
And thanks again, Emily. It was great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I hope everyone enjoys this episode. And I hear you next time. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.